Good morning and welcome to Saturday AM. I'm Linda Mottram. Today on the program, how quarantines were botched in Victoria and the US at odds over face masks as COVID-19 sweeps its south and west. But first, life in Hong Kong changed this week after China's rubber stamp parliament rushed through a sweeping new national security law.
Deja vu with a difference on the streets of Hong Kong. Protesters clashing with police, tear gas, water cannon and even pepper bullets.
China's new national security law for Hong Kong has been greeted with condemnation from the international community.
The Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab says the new law imposed by Beijing is grave and deeply disturbing.
They're now arresting people for owning a banner and it's a crime. Can you believe it? People can't even talk about it, let alone advocate it.
Well, the law threatens sentences of up to life in prison for anyone who subverts Beijing's authority, engages in acts of terrorism or colludes with foreign powers. Hong Kong's chief executive, Carrie Lam, says it will not undermine the autonomy it enjoys under the principle of one country, two systems.
It will only target an extremely small minority of people who have breached the law, while the life and property, basic rights and freedoms of the overwhelming majority of Hong Kong residents will be protected.
But activists say the freedoms that Hong Kong has enjoyed since its 1997 handover from Britain have been snuffed out. Hundreds of people have already been arrested, some pro-democracy campaigners have fled, and many have shut down their social media accounts.
I can assure you that many Hong Kong people are very, very alarmed and very concerned.
Emily Lau is a former Hong Kong lawmaker.
And it does have this chilling effect, which, of course, the communist officials have said many times that that's what it aimed to do. And so much so that maybe more and more people will practice self-censorship and will not say or do things that they normally do. And some, of course, may want to get out of this place because they are very, very concerned about their freedoms and personal safety.
China's secret police are now less secret now that this law is in effect. It's stationing them openly in Hong Kong to collect intelligence and subdue opposition, as you say. Tell us about the powers those security officials now have.
Actually, we are not sure, but I think they have quite unlimited power. And they are not subjected to the supervision of Hong Kong law. So it is completely a very, very different picture. The freedoms, the personal safety that we have enjoyed for so many decades, it's very dear to our hearts. And now people fear that all that's going to change. The people were not consulted. People had no say. And when the law was unveiled at 11 p.m. on the 30th of June, that was the first time Hong Kong people had a look at the law. I mean, how outrageous. And then the law says that if we do things to bring hatred to the Chinese and the Hong Kong government, we may get into trouble. So my speaking to you now, talking so frankly from my heart, maybe that would be a reason for me to be arrested. So it is very, very terrible.
Terrible and terrifying at a personal level, I can imagine. I was reading during the week that some of the cafes and restaurants that had supported pro-democracy protesters were now pulling down their Lenin walls, those amazing poster walls with messages all over them. It really is going to sort of something very fundamental about the fabric of the place. Will it feel and work differently at a street level in Hong Kong now?
I guess so. And the government's also saying, it's a government official statement saying this, the slogan, this poster, which I think you and others have seen many times, liberate Hong Kong, stand with Hong Kong, revolution of our time. And they say all this, is really not on because it smacks of secession. You know, separating Hong Kong from the People's Republic of China. So you're right. All these slogans, all these, you know, postcards or things that you have seen plaster on the Lenin wall, on in restaurants, they will disappear. And in some cases, the police have gone into these catering outfits to ask them to remove them. So really, it is terrifying, and it is so sad to see a free and vibrant city just, you know, degenerating.
I want to talk about one article of the law particularly, which says that it applies, and I quote here, to offences under this law committed against the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region from outside the region by a person who is not a permanent resident of the region. Now, is China, with that, asserting jurisdiction against everyone on the planet?
I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. And people just say, well, you may have that interpretation, they may, and then we will find out when it happens. But some of the, I think the Beijing officials and the pro-communist officials here have said that, yes. And they say other countries have similar provisions. So I haven't done that extensive research, so I don't know. But it seems that even you, not just me, even you could be in trouble. I think it is quite ridiculous. And people say, well, just let's test it out. Let's see how they implement it, how they enforce it, who's going to be arrested. And some places already told their people not to, if they come to Hong Kong, they should be very careful. And so it is really some kind of a reign of terror.
And by telling their people to be careful, I suppose they'll be telling them to be careful about what they say about Hong Kong and China anywhere in the world, whether they're in Hong Kong and China or whether they're in Australia or America.
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I think it is really bad. And I think it's good that finally the UK government is offering to allow people who hold a British national overseas passport to go to the UK to stay and work and then live there a few years and then earn their right of abode and citizenship. And also your Prime Minister, Mr. Scott Morrison, also saying your country is also considering something similar for Hong Kong people. And the UK government has said that it wants to work with the Five I countries, these English-speaking, Australia, New Zealand, Canada and the US, to ask them to launch this international lifeboat scheme so that Hong Kong people who want to get out of Hong Kong can have a place to go to. And these countries are also a favorite destination for Hong Kong immigrants. So I certainly hope Australia and the other three Five I countries will also launch similar schemes so that if Hong Kong people are very worried, they can apply to get out of the city.
I wanted to ask you too about schools in Hong Kong, because under the law, the Hong Kong government is expected to promote national security education. Do you think that's going to mean a purging of the curriculum in Hong Kong?
I think that is a concern. I have heard reports of concern by teachers and by, you know, educators. It's the curriculum and also the teaching staff and what is expected to be done in the schools themselves. And so it is very worrying. So anything to do with free thinking, whether it's freedom of the press, education freedom, academic freedom, religious freedom, artistic freedom, all these things, people get very concerned because everyone, like you, you're asking, is this going to happen? Will that do? So some people may say, oh, well, actually, I don't know. So maybe the best thing to do is not to touch it, not to say it, not to do it. So we will become a city full of self-censorship and full of fear.
And what about you, Emily Lau? Will you stay?
Well, I have no plans to go anywhere, and I don't have any foreign passport. And, you know, I have been fighting, struggling for democracy and human rights for many decades. I have no desire to do anything else. As they say, why change a habit of a lifetime? You know, we live in very difficult times, but I guess we need people who would want to stand up and have the courage to stand up.
Emily Lau, very, very difficult times. Thank you so much for your perspectives today.
Thank you.
So what does this mean for business in Hong Kong? It's the world's sixth largest financial centre, connecting China with the West. But David Webb, a Hong Kong-based investor and activist, says that too could now be under threat.
There's been a brain drain underway for over a year now since the protest movement started. And the underlying democracy deficit here, the fact that the Legislative Council and the Chief Executive of Hong Kong are not democratically elected, that is the main grievance.
Now, China has been reliant on Hong Kong as an important source of wealth and a connection between the West and China. But there are other Chinese hubs now, financial hubs. But surely the Communist Party will be trying to do what it can to keep big firms and expertise in Hong Kong.
Yes, and I don't think they understand the damage that they're doing. They do want to have a international capital market on Chinese soil in Hong Kong, because, of course, the mainland capital markets are behind a wall of capital controls that you can't freely move money in and out of the mainland. And so that Hong Kong is their only option for that right now, unless you were to set up a stock exchange in Macau. So they do need that. And I don't think the mainland government appreciates how much these markets depend on free exchange of information and expression of opinions, good or bad, about the way the government is running the country.
Now, what about the response from the United States? It's announced that it's extending sanctions to banks that do business with Chinese officials that might be involved in the crackdown in Hong Kong. What impact is that likely to have?
Well, I think if it's focused on the key officials in the Hong Kong and mainland government, then it might have some impact, particularly if it extends to their families. Several of the members of the cabinet of Hong Kong, for example, are business people who have listed companies of their own. So that could have an impact. I cannot possibly suggest that that should be done, because that would make me advocating a sanction by a foreign power. And that is now illegal in Hong Kong, so I cannot say that should be done. But if they do that, then it might have some impact. But there are other things, of course, that could more heavily impact the capital markets here. For example, if the Trump administration was to order all U.S. asset managers to sell mainland government-controlled companies, sell all of the stocks they hold.
Some Hong Kong-based investors have been more supportive of the national security law on the basis that it might restore order to a city that has been rocked by the protests over the past year. Do you think companies are under pressure from Beijing to favour the national law in the security law?
Yes, they certainly have been. They've been lining up in the last few weeks before even seeing this law to support it. It's quite obvious that companies here feel under pressure because of their interests of doing business in the mainland as well. But at the same time, of course, some of those companies are foreign headquartered and face pressure from their own citizens in their headquarter countries that they are kowtowing to China. So they have to walk a narrow line on that.
And David Webb, what about you? Do you feel that you can remain being an investor in Hong Kong?
If I tread carefully, it's been my home for 29 years and my family is firmly based here. But I will probably have to self-censor some of what I might have said because of the new laws.
Investor David Webb speaking to us from Hong Kong.